Hello, I'm Joseph Kassa, and welcome to this podcast where the AI team does a deep dive into some application of systems thinking.
I want to start this deep dive with a very specific and, let's be honest, slightly ridiculous image. I want you to cast your mind back to late 2022. The world is just sort of waking up to what ChatGPT actually is. The hype machine is at full throttle, and someone, amidst all the "this will change the world" headlines, decides to test this billion-dollar superintelligence with a very important problem.
I think I know where you're going with this one.
They ask the AI to write a biblical verse in the style of the King James Bible, explaining how to remove a peanut butter sandwich from a VCR.
It is, without a doubt, a top-tier moment in tech history.
It's iconic, right? The AI doesn't even blink. It writes, "And he cried out to the Lord, saying, 'Oh Lord, how can I remove this sandwich from my VCR, for it is stuck fast and will not budge?'
And the Lord replies with tech support, 'Fear not, my child, take thy butter knife
and carefully insert it between the sandwich and the VCR.' It's hilarious, but it's also the moment the ground actually shifted under our feet.
You know, they laugh because it was absurd, but the tech community, and really anyone paying attention, they sort of gasped because it actually worked.
That's the thing. It understood the technical instruction, you know, how to physically get the thing out, but it also understood style and tone and context and humor. It did it all at once. And that blend of technical skill and creative nuance is exactly where we are jumping in today. We are exploring the book Applying AI in Learning and Development by Josh Cavalier,
which was published in 2026, so it has this really interesting vantage point.
Yeah.
Cavalier is looking back at that sandwich in the VCR moment as the spark that didn't just change the internet, but specifically dismantled and rebuilt the world of learning and development, L&D.
Which feels like the industry that got hit the hardest and the earliest. I mean, I have these vivid memories of pushing overhead projectors around on carts.
Oh, yeah.
Then we thought we were cutting edge with CD-ROMs. Now, Cavalier is describing a world where an AI builds an entire training course, slides, quizzes, the whole nine yards in 60 seconds.
It's just a staggering leap. But the mission here for this deep dive isn't just to gawk at the shiny new toys.
Mm-hmm.
We have to get past the wow factor.
Right.
Cavalier's main argument is that this technology requires a complete identity shift for professionals. We're moving from being content creators, the people who write the slides, to something he calls the human-machine performance analyst.
The human-machine performance analyst. That is a mouthful.
It's a bit of a cyborg job title, isn't it?
It really sounds like I need a cybernetic eye implant to even apply for the role. But we're going to unpack that, because if I'm an instructional designer today, or really anyone in corporate training, I need to know if I'm about to be obsolete or if I just need a new business card.
You definitely need new business cards.
Not enough. But before we get to the job titles, let's look at the engine driving all of this. Cavalier makes a really big distinction in the book between machine learning and generative AI. I feel like we use those interchangeably at parties, but they're not the same thing, are they?
No, not at all. And the distinction really matters if you want to understand where the industry is going.
Right.
Think of machine learning like, say, the Netflix algorithm.
Okay.
It's a prediction engine. It watches what you do. You like Stranger Things. You watch The Witcher.
Yeah.
And it says, okay, statistically, you will probably like this other sci-fi movie next.
Mm.
It's just analyzing patterns to make a recommendation. It's a very, very smart suggestion box.
Right. It's pointing at things that already exist.
Exactly. Generative AI, or Gen AI, is different because it creates. It doesn't just predict. It constructs something new.
Huh.
The classic example Cavalier uses is DALL-E. If you type an astronaut riding a horse on Mars, it doesn't go find that image on Google. That image doesn't exist. It paints it pixel by pixel based on its understanding of astronaut and horse and Mars.
And that creative capability is what scares people. But Cavalier says we've moved beyond just text and static images. He talks about the multimodal concept. This seems to be the buzzword of 2026.
It's the key to the current era. Early on, you had a text AI, or you had an image AI. They were siloed. Now, we have systems that process text, audio, video, and code all at the same time. They're becoming more like us. When you and I are sitting here talking, I'm not just reading a transcript of your words. I'm hearing your tone, seeing your expressions, your hand gestures. Multimodal AI does the same thing. It mimics how humans make sense of the world.
Which brings us to how this actually applies to learning. Cavalier breaks this down into four dimensions. I want to walk through these because I think it helps frame just how fast this is all moving. It's not just AI writes a quiz. 1D is the baseline, right?
Yeah, 1D is text and code. This is all about efficiency. You feed the AI a 50-page technical manual and on some new software, and it spits out a summary, or it writes a quiz, or maybe it generates some Python code for a simple practice app. It's useful, it saves time, but it's just the beginning.
Then we hit 2D, which feels a bit more like the production side of things. This is where we start seeing the gloss.
2D is multimedia. This is where the AI generates synthetic voices that sound, you know, indistinguishable from humans, pauses, breaths, intonation.
Mm-hmm.
Or it creates custom images for your slides, so you aren't using the same generic stock photos everyone else is.
Right.
It's about engagement and production value. It kind of solves a blank page problem for creators who have good ideas, but maybe not the best design skills.
Okay, so 1D writes it, 2D makes it look and sound good. 3D is where it starts getting properly immersive.
3D is about building worlds.
Mm.
So think about training someone to repair a high-voltage transformer. You don't want them learning on the real thing, one mistake and they're dead, or you've blown $1 million of equipment. AI can now generate 3D models in VR environments where you can practice that completely risk-free. It builds the digital twin of the machinery instantly.
But the real game changer, and the one that Cavalier seems most excited about, is 4D. This is the one that still feels a bit like science fiction to me.
4D is real-time and adaptive. This is the holy grail. Imagine you are in a negotiation training simulation. Usually those are just scripted trees.
Choose your own adventure, yeah.
Exactly. You click option A, the pre-recorded video plays. You click B, a different video plays. But in a 4D environment, the AI is playing the role of the angry client live. It's not reading a script. It's listening to your voice, analyzing your stress levels through the mic, and reacting in real time.
So if my voice shakes or I sound unsure, it pounces.
Exactly. If you hesitate, it pushes harder. If you de-escalate well, it calms down. It's improvising based on your performance. And then the second it's over, becomes a coach, giving you instant feedback. You were too aggressive in the first minute, or you totally missed the cue when I mentioned budget.
That is just wild. It's essentially a dedicated expert tutor for every single employee, available 24/7. But, and here's the but, if the AI can write the text and make the video and build the simulation and coach the learner, I'm looking at my job description and feeling a pretty serious draft. What exactly am I supposed to do?
That is the existential crisis of the book. And Cavalier shares this story about a vendor demo that really drove this home for him. A guy imports a boring standard operating procedure document, just a dry PDF about compliance, and in under a minute, the AI spits out a fully formed course. Slides, quizzes, interactive activities, the works.
60 seconds. In the old days, that was, what, 3 weeks of work for an instructional designer? Maybe a month if you had to wait for approvals?
So naturally, the reaction is, well, I'm fired.
Right. Nice knowing you all.
But Cavalier argues, no, you're just changing jobs. This brings us back to that term, the human-machine performance analyst. The argument is we're shifting from creation to orchestration.
Mm.
We aren't the ones laying the bricks anymore. We're the architects. The HMPA blends data analytics, the machine side, for delivering design and empathy, the human side.
I like the idea of being an architect, but practically speaking, how do I know what I should be orchestrating versus what I should still be doing myself? Do I just, you know, sit back and drink coffee while the AI works?
Not quite. Cavalier offers a framework for this called the Human AI Task Scale. It's a 7-level spectrum, and it's a really brilliant way to visualize where you fit in. So at level 1, you have fully human tasks.
Okay, give me an example of a level 1. What can the machine absolutely not do?
Counseling an employee who's struggling with burnout, or deciding on the ethical framework for your company,
mm-hmm.
or even just determining the right tone for a sensitive message during a crisis. Things that require deep empathy, nuance, high-level strategic reasoning. The machine can't feel the room.
Right. Okay, so right. We hold on to level 1 tight. That's our fortress.
Then you move through the middle, levels 3 and 4, which are collaborative. This is where the human guides the AI. It's the Centaur model, you know, half human, half algorithm. You prompt it, it generates, you refine, you're the editor-in-chief.
But then you get all the way up to level 7.
Level 7 is the fully autonomous agent.
Mm-hmm.
It's where the AI does the work, manages the schedule, and executes the task. It's an agent that talks to other agents. The human's role there is purely governance. You are the safety switch.
So success isn't about beating the AI at its own game. It's about knowing where a task sits on that scale. We shouldn't be trying to compete with the machine at level 7 tasks, like processing data.
No, we should be doubling down on level 1.
And governing level 7.
Because autonomous agents can make mistakes.
Yeah.
But the shift is fundamental. You stop asking, how do I rate this course? And you start asking, does this course actually improve performance? And is the machine delivering it correctly? You become an auditor of effectiveness.
That sounds great in theory. I'm an orchestrator now. But Cavalier also drops a pretty big reality check in the book. He says most companies think they are these futuristic AI powerhouses, but really they're living in the era of shadow AI.
Shadow AI sounds ominous, and honestly, from a security standpoint, it is. It basically just means that while leadership is sitting in boardrooms debating policy and writing these lengthy PDFs about AI governance, the employees are already using it. They're on their personal phones, using ChatGPT to write emails or code or summarize reports, because the company hasn't given them a secure tool yet.
I feel seen. I know so many people doing this. Just let me check this email for tone. Copy-paste into personal ChatGPT. What's the harm, really? It's just an email.
The harm is data leakage. Cavalier mentions executives accidentally pasting proprietary strategy documents into public chatbots. Imagine you're a CEO working on a merger. You paste the draft press release into a public model to spruce it up.
Mm-hmm.
Technically, depending on the terms of service, the model can now learn from that. You've potentially just leaked your entire merger strategy to the machine and, by extension, the world.
Yikes. So why are companies so slow to adapt if everyone is doing it anyway?
Cavalier describes this psychological roller coaster he calls the technology fear cycle. And it happens with every big tech shift. First, new tech emerges, then fear spikes. It's going to kill us. It's going to take our jobs.
Mm.
So companies react with these swift, knee-jerk bans. No ChatGPT allowed.
The head in the sand phase.
Exactly. But then the slow scientific evidence starts to come in. We see what it can actually do. The fear subsides. And eventually, we reach regulation and social norms. We are currently in the messy middle of that cycle. We're moving past the panic bans, but we haven't quite figured out the stable norms yet.
And while we're navigating this mess, the way we look at skills is changing too. Cavalier talks about the skills gap analysis. In the old days, this was a spreadsheet you did once a year.
If you were lucky. Usually it was just a guess. A manager would say, I think we need more Python developers, or the sales team seems bad at closing. It was purely anecdotal.
But now the HMPA can use AI to analyze, well, everything.
Pretty much. Cavalier talks about analyzing Slack chats, project reports, GitHub repositories, all in real time. The AI can spot, hey, the marketing team is using terms related to data analytics incorrectly in their internal chat, or the engineering team is struggling with a specific library in their code. It catches the skills gap before the project fails.
That is incredibly powerful, but also a little creepy. Analyzing Slack chats.
It walks a very fine line, absolutely. But from a performance standpoint, it's revolutionary. Instead of waiting for a project to crash to realize you had a skills gap, you catch it in the workflow. However, and this is important, Cavalier adds a huge caveat here. AI is great at analyzing history. It is terrible at predicting novel skills.
Horizon scanning.
Exactly. The AI analyzes what has already happened. It can't tell you that you need to learn a skill that hasn't even been invented yet. That is still a level one human task.
Yeah.
We still need humans to look at the horizon and say, you know, I think quantum computing ethics is going to be a big deal next year. The AI doesn't know what it doesn't know.
Speaking of things the AI doesn't know, let's pivot to what Cavalier calls the black box. He uses this great analogy from Star Wars, you know, Han Solo banging on the Millennium Falcon's dashboard to make it jump to light speed.
Percussive maintenance.
It works in the movies.
Yeah.
But Cavalier's point is that so many organizations are treating AI like the Millennium Falcon. They're just banging on the dashboard, hoping it works without any clue what's happening under the hood.
And when you're dealing with corporate training or hiring or performance data, that is just so dangerous.
Yeah.
He brings up the Amazon case study from a few years back. This is the cautionary tale everyone needs to hear because it illustrates the black box problem perfectly.
Right. This is their resume screener.
Back around 2014, Amazon tried to build an AI to screen resumes. Great idea on paper, save time, find the best talent. But by 2015, they realized something was very wrong. The AI didn't like women.
Now, this is important. The AI wasn't programmed by a bunch of guys saying exclude women, right? So how does an algorithm become sexist?
This is the garbage in, garbage out principle. They train the AI on 10 years of historical hiring data.
Yeah.
And who has historically dominated the tech industry? Men. So the AI just looked at all that data and concluded successful candidates are usually men. It started penalizing resumes that had the word women's in them, like captain of the women's chess club. It even downgraded graduates from all women's colleges.
That is terrifying. Of the past.
It was a mirror, not a crystal ball. And that is the lesson for the human-machine performance analyst.
Yeah.
You cannot just trust the black box. You have to be the ethical guardian. You have to be the one to ask, what data was this trained on? What bias is baked into this? Is it hallucinating?
Hallucinations, that's when the AI just makes stuff up, right? Like the peanut butter sandwich prayer, but less funny and a lot more dangerous.
Precisely. If an AI creates a safety course for a chemical plant and it hallucinates a safety procedure that's actually wrong, telling you to mix two chemicals that explode, people could get hurt. The HMPA has to be the filter, the governance layer that ensures the output is accurate and safe.
So the job description is 10% creating content, 40% orchestrating the machines, and 50% checking their homework to make sure they aren't lying to you.
Or poisoning you.
Which brings us to the end, and strangely, back to food. We started with a peanut butter sandwich and a VCR, and we're ending with smoked potato salad.
I love this anecdote. So Josh Cavalier, the author, he's a hobbyist cook. He loves smoking food, BBQ style. And he decided to test the AI by asking it to write learning objectives for making smoked potato salad.
A very niche request.
Very niche. And the AI nailed it. It blended the creativity of a hobby with the rigid structure of instructional design perfectly. It broke down the temperature control, the wood chip selection. It was great. But here's the kicker. He initially phrased the prompt as, write learning objectives for smoking a potato.
Okay.
And the AI refused. It thought he meant smoking a potato like a cigarette.
No way.
It kicked in a safety guardrail. It said, I can't help you with that. Smoking a potato would be dangerous to your health.
That's hilarious. But it's also a perfect example of what we've been talking about, isn't it? The machine has these guardrails, but it just lacks context. It doesn't know about BBQ until you explain it properly.
This shows the blend of rigidity and brilliance. And it serves as a nice summary of the evolution Cavalier describes in the book. He outlines four eras of L&D. We started with creation manual work, building everything by hand.
The overhead projector days.
Then curation, building libraries of content.
Yeah.
Then generation, where we are now, using AI to create the content. And finally, automation, where AI agents run the show.
And as we move toward that automation era, toward level 7, Cavalier leaves us with a pretty provocative thought. If the machines are the doers, are we really ready to just be the architects?
That's the big question. It requires a completely different mindset. You have to be willing to let go of the making part, the writing, the slide design, the coding, and focus entirely on the meaning part. Governance, strategy, empathy. It sounds easy, but for a lot of creative professionals, that is a painful transition. We like making things.
We do. There's a satisfaction in the craft. But the argument here is that the craft is changing. The craft is no longer moving the pixels. The craft is designing the system that moves the pixels.
And ensuring that the system serves the human, not the other way around.
So, for everyone listening, the learner, the curious, the maybe slightly terrified, here's your homework. Look at that human AI task scale.
Yeah.
Ask yourself, where do you spend your day? Are you stuck doing level 3 tasks that an AI could easily do? Or are you cultivating those level 1 skills, the ethics, the empathy, the horizon scanning that the machine can't touch?
Because a sandwich needs to come out of the VCR one way or another. The question is, are you holding the butter knife or are you telling the robot where to put it?
I think on that note, we'll wrap up. Thanks for diving deep with us today into the world of AI, sandwiches, and the future of work.
Always a pleasure.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive. Keep learning.
I hope you enjoyed today's deep dive. Why not take a moment and join the discussion in the LinkedIn group, Tackling Complex Problems? Take care.